Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Be the best, and you got to pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing? Just kidding. It's just me today, guys. I do have special guest, our Deontay Lee, one of our fabulous draft analysts. He will be on with me later in this episode. But Rich is taking a well-deserved, I don't want to say break because he's covering playoff hockey and it's very much not a break for him. But it is just me today. I wanted to make sure that we got some news and notes out from this intro segment first, before we get to the all important news of the month, essentially, which is the NFL draft. First and foremost, let's talk about the Allen Robinson trade. This is something that we all saw coming. There was a very slim chance that Allen was going to remain on this team into 2023. There was always going to be a chance because the Rams made it so clear that they wanted to trade him. Really just not a successful contract, not a successful signing for a number of reasons that we've covered a lot of here, but I want to talk about the trade itself. So the Rams and the Steelers had been working to complete the trade over the last couple of days. The Steelers are going to pay about $5 million of Allen Robinson's $15 million guarantees this year. And the Rams basically are paying about 10.2 of the remaining 10.2 million of the remaining money on the deal. Now, they already paid that money in March. So the current structure of the salary cap that you're looking at looks a little bit skewed because it was already factoring in the fact that they already paid 5 million of that, which I think that they were under the understanding that they would do. And they're also going to swap 7th round picks. The Steelers move up like 16 or 17 spots in the 7th round. And this is something that's been sort of a long time coming. We know that Allen struggled last year. I mean, it was very clear for everyone to see. We know that he struggled on the field. And there was a variety of different reasons for that, not the least inclusive to not being able to get any time with the quarterback. Matthew Stafford and Allen got about 100 throws together, I would say, and maybe that's being generous, before actual games started. And Allen, I think, also is pretty clear, had to get his legs under him, understanding the amount of routes on the backside of progressions that he was being tasked to run. Very, very different from what I was watching him do in training camp. When I was watching him in training camp, he was very versatile. They were working him in a variety of different options, whether it was in the slot or on the outside. They were working him in a variety of different concepts. He really was standing out for the positive. And that's just not just me saying that. It was also executives and team personnel and visiting analysts outside of the normal people who cover the Rams and podcast hosts. And I certainly was singing his praises as well. And it's a real learning lesson for me, I think, personally, to make sure that you're not under assuming some of the factors that go into this. And those factors were very much inclusive to, hey, Matthew Stafford's not the one throwing him the ball in training camp. So I think that that's something I certainly will not forget this situation. I definitely own the fact that I had probably really a lot higher expectations for him based on the evidence that I did see than what actually happened. But I also think it's fair to understand the nuance of the situation. And I've written about this extensively and talked about this extensively at theathletic.com and on this podcast, where Sean McVay, Matthew Stafford, and Cooper Kupp, this was their move. And this was also a panic move for the Rams overall and a panic contract for the Rams overall after they lost out on the Von Miller sweepstakes. And they have this money to spend in free agency and they're looking around. And Sean McVay wonders, how are we going to allocate this money? What are we going to do to make sure that we're still in contention, that we're still boosting our, or we think we're boosting our team in some way? And you know, Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp identified Allen Robinson as a player who they felt would be an add to the offense. And the Rams knew, because Odell Beckham Jr. got hurt in the Super Bowl, tore the ACL, that he never really had fully intact in the first place. They knew that, or they said that, you know, we need this type of receiver. We need this role to be filled on our team. And I think that part of the process is where you start to get a little dicey, right? Because that's bad process, not just by those players, not just by Sean McVay, but by the entire staff in general. It's bad process to think that this player could just automatically fill in this role without really, truly having even developed that Odell Beckham role fully in the first place. Because think about it, he was here for half a season and he really started coming on to the offense with about a quarter of the season left. And then really the Super Bowl was the fullest manifestation of what his role would look like. But you don't have a full body of work proving that. You don't have experiments run to prove your theorem. Essentially, you have one outlier game. And that's not to say that if Odell Beckham would have stayed healthy and then continued that role, it would have been probably outstanding, in my opinion. But that wasn't going to be an option. And so you had a limited body of data to understand really what this was going to be and what this could look like. And then you had a limited understanding, as we know now, of the player that you were trying to convince to sign with you and then to fill that vision. Because Allen Robinson is not that guy anymore. He used to be, and I commend him for the career that he's had. But what we saw in training camp, where he most and stood out the best, and I said this at the time, was when they would move him around and he was a versatile player who was mixed into more of the early progressions and more of the early reads. And instead, what we saw a lot of in confluence with just no time to protect the quarterback given by the offensive line, a disaster of injuries compounding in that sense, no run game that the defenses had to be accountable for. You really saw, and then Allen on the backside of most progressions. And then initially, I think struggling a little bit to make sure that he was getting open, especially within the context of the longer developing concepts he was running versus the time that they had to actually throw the ball. I think all of those things are part of how complicated this was and led to some of that failure. So it's not any one thing. It's a lot of things at one time. What the Rams are intaking now is more dead money on their books. They're at like something like $74.5 million in dead money at this point. But at the same time, the move did free up a little bit of the 2023 salary cap because, you know, they're not paying the entirety of the contract. $5 million of that is being paid by the Steelers. So not much, but a little bit. And again, most things, most eyes, most ideas are turned toward that 2024 season. My colleagues and I at The Athletic, we wrote a breakdown of this trade. It sounds like the Steelers immediately have a idea of what they want for Allen Robinson based on, again, the context of where he is at now, not where they believed he was or hoped he would be, but where he's at now. The Steelers historically have been really great developing receivers and having plans for their receivers. It sounds like he's going to be a slot receiver for them and a big friendly target in the middle of the field. This is actually what the Rams were gravitating toward if he was going to stay in Los Angeles. So again, I think it's a smart thing. It's a kind of a no risk, some reward potential move for the Steelers. And I think that he also, Allen as a person, is going to be really great for mentoring some of those young people in that room. Like I've said before, he's a total pro. I mean, I think everyone knew, including himself, that it was just a disaster in Los Angeles, again, for a variety of reasons. And he certainly doesn't escape the blame for some of that. But I think he's just going to really benefit from not only having a really cohesive and just set structured plan for him that's not asking him to be something he's no longer capable of being. But also I think that room, I mean, he's not going to be the guy. He's going to contribute, but not be the number one contributor, or even really probably the number two. So I think that this is a good move for the Steelers. It certainly was just a player slash contract dump move for the Rams, and we'll see what happens. One thing I want to say is I think that this further puts some of the anticipation, I think, from fans that the Rams will probably add to their receiver or tight end core in this draft class. Deontay and I are going to talk a little bit about this in our next segment, but I also think that you really can't rule out that anyway. Even if Allen was still on the roster, you probably wouldn't be able to rule that out under a Sean McVay led team. A couple of programming notes for you guys. Next week, Les and Sean will have their pre-draft press conference. The Rams are also doing a draft house, so I will be reporting to you from that house, day and time to be determined, but that's where I'll be through the course of the draft. So really looking forward to bringing you guys into that space as I did last year and the year before that. That's always kind of a cool thing because you get to see all the scouts and really get into their process and really get into how these decisions are made. And as much of that as I can share with you guys, I will definitely do that. And then one more programming note I wanted to say too, I did not communicate clearly in my last episode with Rich about my thoughts on the Rams not drafting for special teams players. When I said that, I did not mean to put out there that they wouldn't draft a kicker or a punter or both. I don't think they'll draft a long snapper. That's just my opinion. I do think that those are positions that they could target in the later rounds of the draft. When I say that I don't think they're drafting just for special teams, I mean the coverage units players. So linebackers that are only going to have a ceiling for special teams, safeties that are only going to have a ceiling for special teams. What I am saying in this regard is they are no longer a top heavy team where you could get away with sort of throwing a bone to maybe your special teams coordinator who really pressed for those types of positions. Joji Camillus really pressed for, hey, it's the fourth round, get me a gunner. Or, and not saying that's a bad thing, it's just the dynamic. And the Rams are not in a position any longer where they are going to be able to get away with doing that. Because naturally they were so top heavy that naturally, if you're going to use a draft pick, the only way a lot of times, especially on offense and sometimes on defense, the only way that player was going to see the field, like let's say it's a hybrid like Jacob Harris, the only way that player is going to really see the field early enough in his career to get true development reps is playing on special teams. So they would identify special teamers, but I don't think you can do that as much this year. I think that a lot of times what you're going to see this year in this draft class is, yes, they maybe could start on special teams and that could be how they get their feet under them, or they're going to play a dual role of depth somewhere and special teamer. But there is more space now because of the way that they've cleared out parts of this roster. There's more space now and more need for day one guys in role playing or starting positions, especially on defense, to the point where you cannot let those resources in the middle rounds of the drafts go solely toward special teams. Now, I'm not talking about specialists. Specialists are the kicker, the punter, sometimes the long snapper. Specialists, I can see them drafting in the later rounds. But when I talk about not drafting specifically for special teams, I mean, they're not identifying safeties with a ceiling of being a special teamer. They're not identifying linebackers with a ceiling of being a special teamer. No, they are now, they have to look at players who have a ceiling that is higher than that, because now they have the space for that player to progress through that level where it was a hard cap in previous years because of all of the core veterans that they had under contract. So hopefully that makes a little bit better sense. That's my bad for not communicating that a little bit better. Wanted to make sure that there's not misinformation out there. And guys, one thing I am really, really excited for is my guest today, Deontay Lee. If you're not already checking out his work at The Athletic, he is essential pre-draft and post-draft reading. He knows more about the draft than most. He definitely knows more about the draft than me. And without further ado, I'm really happy to introduce Deontay Lee.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
And now I am so happy to re-welcome back to the show one of my favorite people that I work with, and also one of the smartest people on our staff in general, whether it's draft or just pure football, Deontay Lee. How are you?
I feel good. I don't know if you know this. I don't think I've talked to you about this, but you were the first person from The Athletic that I met in 2021 when I came to Indianapolis. And I don't know if people knew at the time that they were courting me when I was working at Pro Football Focus, but you were one of the first people I met. And obviously, you know, I have a great deal of respect for your work. So it's great to always talk ball with you. I've been following your work since you were covering the Panthers, and I'm happy to be here.
I like to think that I helped, you know, recruit you a little bit, unknowingly, of course.
There you go.
But when I first met you, because I had been such a fan of your work, and I'd listened to you guys, your podcast, and I was like, oh, we should hire this guy. And lo and behold,
here I am.
We did, yeah. But Deontay, the Rams draft is the stakes are high this year. We were sort of talking a little bit off recording about how high the stakes are for them to reset a lot of their depth and also some of their premium positions, even with this draft class. And they've got plenty of opportunities to do it. I just kind of want to jump right into it. What do you see happening at 36 and 69?
Well, I think, you know, you kind of teed it up perfectly. The roster is obviously in the middle of a pivot. You know, if it wasn't confirmed with the Jalen Ramsey trade, I think moving off of Allen Robinson gave some pretty clear signals that, you know, they're looking at building around this core a little bit differently than they had over the last half decade. And I think that starts with trying to bring in premium position talent, right? So the difficulty for them is when you try to compete at the highest level for an extended period of time, you often do that at the cost of draft capital, right? If you're always looking to aggressively improve your roster. So I would say that the way I would like the Rams to approach this is to look at corner and defensive end or edge rusher in general. That's probably the best way to go about starting the rebuilding process, getting playmakers there, you know, obviously not being able to force a bunch of turnovers, you know, the pressure rates being all over the place throughout the season. And this has kind of been, I think, the way that they've built this roster defensively there's just kind of a natural ebb and flow that goes because of the guys that they have in certain spots and the way that the money's been spent. So I think that really getting back to trying to find premium position talent in the top 100 on the defensive end is probably the way that I would expect them to go in this draft.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've talked so much over the years about this scheme that they run. And not only does a robust offense that's producing points and actually putting together, extensive drives, not going three and out at a record rate like the Rams did last season,
right.
And actually mixing tempo and ball control and doing the things that Sean McVay we know wants to do with this offense, lifts the defense on the other side. The two systems are extremely complementary to each other, ironically, because they were sort of designed to attack each other in the first place. But within the same house, they are very, very complementary. And some of the issues that the Rams defense did have that you mentioned is, you know, they weren't aggressively taking the ball away. They were sort of taking the lesser of two evils in a sense and playing, you know, with a softer zone. And I know that Rams fans really hate that phrase. And I understand, because when you can't see the DBs on your TV screen, it drives you a little nuts, right?
Right.
And but that's the bargain that they had to take to prevent the games from getting so lopsided and to also, you know, sort of make up for the fact that a lot of their corners were just not up to par, other than, you know, outside of Jalen Ramsey and Kobe Durant came on really well at the end of the year. But outside of Jalen, you know, they had to make up for the fact that not only are you trying to prevent explosives first and foremost over everything else to prevent a game from getting too lopsided, knowing your offense is not going to score points on the other side to keep pace. But then also, you know, you're sort of giving a little help cushion to your young DBs. And so what I'm wondering at corner, because I agree with you, I think these are two agreed upon premium positions, pass rush, and corner, elite corner, that the Rams are very open and clear about their willingness to invest in, because it's a day one production position, right? Mm-hmm. So at corner specifically, what kinds of traits, because they don't want to be that soft. Yes, they know that their defense is going to take some pretty gnarly bumps this next year. I think there's going to be some growing pains. They've sort of been okay with them being the sacrificial lamb in a sense, in order to clear their books and their roster, but getting an infusion of speed and traits, what do you look at for corner when you think about, especially at pick 36 or 69 or, you know, anywhere in the middle, because it's less, so we might trade back, but 36 or 69, for the sake of argument, what traits do you think stand out? And are there any players that sort of immediately flash in your mind?
I think that number one, you want players that are going to meet a certain kind of physical baseline in terms of athletic traits, right? Especially when you're talking about being out of the top 30, and this, particularly in this class, because I think that it's very top heavy with premium defensive talent. A lot of the guys that have been dominating the conversation on this side of the ball, obviously your Christian Gonzalez's, your Devin Witherspoon's, the Joey Porter Jr.'s, Deontay Banks, all the ones that are kind of consensus first round guys, obviously the Rams are not going to have access to those players. And those are the guys that are pretty refined and advanced in their technique. So you're going to want guys that are as close to crossing that threshold as possible, but have the athleticism to buy themselves some margin for error along the way as they develop. So some of the guys that I've looked at that I like would be Darius Rush and Cam Smith from South Carolina. You know, two teammates, they both are above 6 feet, which is something that you would like to have for a mid-round type of corner. I think they've got the necessary arm length to be able to play up at the line of scrimmage. And these are two guys that are good athletes and have good feel for routes that are being run, can run a bunch of different coverages. That's something that's obviously been a priority in Los Angeles, is the ability to be versatile, right? Because that allows you to feature your best player and maybe the best player in the NFL period, and Aaron Donald, is the versatility to be able to build everything around 99. So getting guys that can do a myriad of things but have the athletic ability to where you can play matchups. You know, if you have a certain type of receiver that you're dealing with, you can put a big body guy on there. If you need a guy that can be in the slot or the perimeter, that's what Jalen Ramsey did so well over the last few years, right? So I think guys like Darius Rush and Cam Smith would be players that I would be happy with if I were a Rams fan, if I saw them select in that 69 or 77 range. Tyreek Stevenson is another guy that's kind of in that range. I think with him, you would draft a guy like that thinking, hey, we want to have good tacklers. He fits more of the zone model, I think, than playing more man coverage, which would be fine. Like, you know, what we've been talking about, I think even in a more aggressive scheme for the Rams, you'll still see a lot of zone coverage featured. Mm-hmm. That was a Super Bowl run, was a lot of zone coverage, but they were playing a little bit tighter because they felt like they could get home more with their pass rush.
More match zone than a cushion.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, and I think that, you know, Stevenson can maybe fit in that world, and he's another guy that you can move inside or out. So I would say that cluster of three would be the guys that you would be happiest with. And then some of the guys that are later, like Julius Brents, is a little bit more of like a projection or a developmental guy, somebody that might actually end up being a better safety than corner, which I know that they're probably not looking to attack so early in the draft. Cameron Mitchell's kind of in that same mold of a guy that can probably play in the slot. So I would say once you get past that line for cornerback, you probably feel a little bit less secure about it. So I would say if I was an area scout and they're sitting me down and asking me, and that's the position group I've been working with, I would be pounding the table hard to say we cannot leave that 69-77 range without attacking this position at least once, because the next guys after that don't meet the threshold necessary to improve this defense.
Yeah, I love that. And you also just gave me a story idea. I'm going to go around and ask scouts what the most aggressive or like wild way they've express themselves mm-hmm. to make people pay attention to them yes. when they're talking about these things.
Because I can imagine.
I mean, we've had guys jumping in the damn pool here in Los Angeles. So, right. Yeah.
I mean,
so.
Particularly with this organization, right? I mean, McVay off of the Shanahan tree, Les Snead being the personality is, I'm sure it takes a bit to try to get those kind of guys' attention, you know, fighting.
Someone brings sparklers into right, the meeting.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And then similar question for edge rush, although a little bit different angle. Also, by the way, you had me thinking too, I could totally see Les Snead trading out of 36 and mm-hmm. Staying at 69, but doubling up at one of those cluster corners that you mentioned yep. With later round picks going yep. corner edge or going two corners even within
two
that.
Corners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could totally see him doing that. So with pass rush, I think we get lost in Aaron Donald sauce, essentially. Yes. Like we get lost mm-hmm. in because he's so great and he's so elite. But what kind of pass rusher, especially minus Leonard Floyd, and then a very developmental guy, two very developmental guys in Michael Hoyt and Daniel Hardy mm-hmm. are really the only guys who have, you know, meaningful experience. And I say meaningful with heavy sarcasm because I liked what I saw from them, but it just is not. I mean, they don't have anybody rushing right. the passer. So what traits do you think best unlock Aaron Donald if you're specifically looking at an edge rusher?
It's back to versatility, right? Mm-hmm. And that was one of the reasons why Leonard Floyd stuck so long, I think, in Los Angeles, in despite the fact that he wasn't maybe the highest productive guy in terms of purely rushing the passer. It's the fact that he could set an edge. He had a lot of length, you know, which allowed him to play more in that 3-4 style or bare front packages that they've been running in order to get, you know, Aaron Donald one-on-one situations on the interior. So I would say looking for versatility is certainly something I think that's still on the list. For me, I know watching them, if there are frustrations to be had, it's that it's just really difficult, I think, to play defense in the NFL year over year if you don't have at least one guy on the edge that requires a certain level of attention from an offensive line or from a quarterback or offensive coordinator. So I would say for as much as I would like to pitch someone like a BJ Ojulari, who maybe in 2-3 years can be a souped up version of Leonard Floyd or maybe closer to what Leonard Floyd was at his athletic peak, it's hard not to look at a guy like maybe Derek Hall, who I think is a little bit more ready to be a pure pass rush type that can still do enough athletically to be moved around or used different ways. And Isaiah Foskey will be another guy in that kind of second round range that might be able to do that. So again, that would be the cluster of guys I think I will be debating most. Ojulari is the one you take because you would look at his film and say, that's very familiar to what the stamp has been on Rams defense, right? Long armed guy, pretty tall. He's young. He's probably, I think he's one of the youngest in the class mm-hmm. on the edge outside of like Tuli Tuipulotu. And I think Tuipulotu is a little bit later of a projection in terms of when he would be drafted, more in that 69-77 range. So I would say Derek Hall is probably a high second round guy that I'd have in mind. And then BJ Ojulari, if you can stand the process of getting him developed. The only other guy I might pound the table for is if Miles Murphy takes the dip that it seems like he might. they're like very disparate opinions because he wasn't the most productive guy as a pass rusher. But you look at the traits, you look at the height, the arm length, the weight, and then running a 4.5, 140, I believe, at his pro day. That's hard to look away from. It means you can do a little bit less in terms of versatility, mm-hmm. but you probably get a guy that's a little bit closer to being an NFL level pass rusher right out the gate. So that's kind of what I'm up in the air about. If I'm a Rams fan, is whether or not these guys in conjunction with those corners, whether or not, you know, where you want to shoot your first shot at premier defensive talent.
Yeah. And what it's great stuff, Deontay. And then what that tells me too, is if you can find a guy with similar traits, and you know you have a long runway, and you have something up your sleeve, because we know that they've traded for their premier pass rushers. Either they've signed the veteran castoffs that Leonard Floyd once was, and he was a perfect fit for what they did and really thrived and blossomed in LA, or they go out and they trade for somebody, and they're not going to do that necessarily. Anything could happen.
It's hard to talk in absolutes with this front office.
If they're competitive and wild times, Deontay, because if they're as competitive as they believe they actually will be close to the deadline, then yeah, I can see them getting a little bit twitchy fingers about some of their future picks, but they want to stay disciplined for the most part through 2023 into 2024, where they're going to have a huge number of picks and like something like nearly $80 million in cap space at this point. And so I think that if you see them take a guy who has, you know, like some of the traits that you described in BJ, like, I think that shows you that maybe they've got one of those moves up their sleeves in the future, because they're going to allow that runway, knowing that they are very much in a Aaron Donald contention window. You have the best player on the planet under contract for the next year, 2 years, and he's got a no trade clause. So you've got to be telling him what the plan is.
100%.
Right? And then I think if you see them go early on a pass rusher, that also illustrates your point to where they're in a little bit of a bind. They need somebody who can produce on day one. And if that's not coming via acquisition, they need somebody who can effectively rush the passer. And then I would also say, and this was a question I was going to ask you later, but I think it fits really well now. You know, what people sometimes forget too, is that can also be a defensive lineman that is acquired with, I wouldn't say maybe a premium pick, because I think there's a bit of a gap between the guys who are going to go first and then the guys in the Rams range. But that's also a way to set up some of these mismatches and matchups to get Aaron free, even if it's maybe a pass rusher, specifically an edge in the later rounds. If you go a little bit higher on a D lineman who you know can really help free up Aaron in the short term and be a day one contributor, and you can maybe get him a little bit later, later being a relative term, because it'd be like second, third, fourth, maybe early fourth. Then I think that's also a type of strategy that maybe they discuss and look at. And so with D linemen, first of all, what are you looking at in this class overall? And do you think those types of players exist in maybe the third round and the late third?
So with the Ram, well, for me in general, movement skills is a big thing right now with where the NFL is at. All the outside zone you're seeing, all the perimeter runs and passes that you see in the NFL, it requires a certain level of athleticism, burst, and agility, which is why Aaron Donald thrives, right? In spite of not being the biggest in terms of height and weight, the fact that he's very explosive and that he has great hand usage and play strength, you know, he's able to do a lot of things. I was talking with Mina Kimes about that yesterday, is that that's what separates a guy like a Jalen Carter from the rest of this class. Right, is that you can look and see, okay, he does not have a weakness in terms of things that an offense can do to him that he can't have an answer for. In terms of third round guys or players in that range, the defensive tackle from Northwestern, Adetemiwa Adebowore, he's really fascinating, you know, as an athlete, 280 pounds, ran a sub 4.5, 40 yard dash at the combine. So we're talking like top 95th, 98th percentile athlete for his height and weight. He's a project, you know, and again, once you start talking about back end of the top 100, you're usually going to be taking chances on guys like that. So that's a guy that could be a defensive tackle that can help as a pass rusher, that you can play opposite a guy like that. If you're thinking more in the 2021 mold, where we want to have guys that are big bodies, so that way we can stop the run when we need to stop the run, because we trust that 99 can get to the quarterback on third down, guys like Mazi Smith is a little too high, but Siaki Ika is in that same kind of mold. Is a big 330-pound defensive tackle. You know, you can put him at nose. He can eat up double teams when you want to play your 3-4 stuff. So those are probably, that would be the big body guy, I think, in that range. So I would say those two are maybe the ones that I'd be most interested in as far as defensive tackle goes. And Byron Young from Alabama is kind of in between the two of them, and maybe a bit of a step down in terms of quality of player or how ready he'll be to be a high level contributor on day one in his NFL career. But he's another solid player that you can play on the interior.
Interesting. Yeah. The setup guy, being the setup guy for Aaron Donald, not a bad gig. It's not bad work if you can find it, but one thing I also want to ask you, especially about those first two picks. So this is a Sean McVay led team, and a Sean McVay led team is always going to be a little bit more inclined to press for offense. And that's really a lot of what the Rams 2023 sort of setup year is looking at in general, is revitalizing an offense that was truly atrocious, and injuries aside, was truly atrocious last year. Obviously their historically injured offensive line, you know, had a lot to do with that. And quarterback didn't make it through the season. Right. Top receivers didn't make it, you know, all of these things that happened. But with the Sean McVay led team, he has always had also a penchant for mismatched tight ends, where this draft class happens to be extremely strong. But the topic of a tight end is a little bit polarizing in some ways, because there is some data, and not a huge sample size, but there's some data out there that suggests that getting them in the third round, you know, is basically the most efficient way to do it, because tight ends are generally more productive on a second contract than on a first. Right. But it's, like I said, it's a limited sample size to choose from, because we just haven't seen what, you know, generally in modern NFL history, what these, you know, early round tight ends can do. Mm-hmm. And there's just a limited pool to choose from. But when you look at this class and you look at the way the Rams run their offense, and the way that, you know, Tyler Higbee is on a contract year, Bryson Hopkins is on the last year of his rookie deal. They brought in Hunter Long via Jalen Ramsey trade. We don't know what he is capable of. He was a third round projection on their board back when he came out in the draft, and they liked him. But at the same time, we don't know what he can do in this offense yet. So where would you pick a tight end if you're Sean McVay and Les Snead?
I mean, I think the strategy that you laid out is sound. You know, I would say in general, in terms like the onboarding process of getting guys adjusted to the NFL, it's probably the longest for tight ends, because what you're asked to do at the NFL level is just totally different. Like, probably could not be more different from what it is at the college level, right? The level of edge rusher you're dealing with, the level of motor you're going to see from those guys, you know, that you're trying to block, is going to be much higher than what you'll see at the college level. The kind of routes, the details and the timing and where you need to be at and making catches in traffic and just how fast the game is moving. There's a reason why it takes guys that are not like Jimmy Graham to be immediate contributors, or your Kittles and guys of that magnitude. It takes most players a while, you know? So I would say third round-ish, if you met, let's say you find your star edge rusher at 36, and one of your third round picks you spend on corner, and it's a guy that you're in love with, and now you're looking at 77 maybe, or if it goes in the other direction and you know you'll have a corner available at 77 that you love, or a couple of them that you're comfortable with. I would say a guy like Lou Schoonmaker from Michigan. I think he meets the athletic threshold that you would like to see in this kind of offense, where you can get back in your 12 personnel sets and using outside zone to set up screen game and vertical passes and dumping the ball off on checkdowns. He can create a little bit of offense after the catch. We saw that a little bit against Ohio State when he played. He's done a little bit of that in his career. And I think that he's probably a good enough blocker to where once he figures it out, or the process of him figuring it out, won't be any longer than some of the guys that we'll see at the top of the draft at this position. Tucker Kraft's interesting. I don't really know where his draft stock is at exactly now. I know he didn't play a whole lot in this past season dealing with an injury, but he's another great athlete. comes from, you know, one of the Dakota schools. So, you know, it's a lot of run game, pro style type of offenses. I would be comfortable with a guy like that if he slips. And then Sam Laporta, you know, if there is a position from a school that you can kind of take sight unseen, I think it's Iowa tight ends. Most of them turn out pretty well. But he's another versatile guy. He's a little bit lighter. So I think you'd probably be thinking about him a little bit more as your move around guy, your motion guy. Can we get him matched up on a slot defender? And it's a mismatch because he's bigger and stronger than those guys. Maybe we'll take a little bit of time to figure it out from a blocking perspective, needs to put on a little bit of weight. But I would say any of those guys can contribute at the tight end position. And It would make a lot of sense. Again, like you said, what we know about this kind of offense and what it is at its absolute best and the balance that it can have at its absolute best, getting a guy at tight end that can figure it out, maybe not right now, but certainly as he develops in the NFL, would be a huge boon for this offense and Sean McVay.
I have been matching Tucker Kraft to the Rams because I think he's just a Rams mold guy. Yep. Like he just really, it seems like everything that they look for traits wise and projection wise. Mm-hmm. Also slightly because my dog's name is Tucker. So, you know, these are the types of biases.
Yes.
The reason why I'm not in the room, right? This would be not what I would be pounding the table on. I would sort of like hold my breath at this one, right, and not share that particular element with the GM of the team. Okay. Another polarizing topic for the Rams is what to do at running back. So Just to outline too, for those who, maybe don't know, is Cam Akers. So, obviously we saw, you know, very roller coaster career so far with the Rams, roller coaster of a season in 2022, and really came on strong. And at the very end of the year, December was outstanding. He is, hoping to continue that progress. He's been on site, since basically February, working out, with the trainers and making sure that he's ready to carry that forward as the lead back. And also something that people don't really know, but, I've put out there a few times, hoping that just to remind people, he's technically, they have his contract rights for two more seasons, because he started the 2021 season on NFI. He technically is an RFA, in 2024. So they could original round tender him. And if, you know, he signs the tender, great. They have him for another season on a cheap tender, on an original round tender. And if he doesn't sign it, if another team comes in with a match, then they would get a second round pick out of this. So basically you're looking at the potential of Cam Akers for two more years with the Rams, a little bit of a loophole in the CBA that they found. So really interesting situation with him, but at the same time, you know, they know this position group has been so up and down injury wise. Some of the guys they've picked in the post Todd Gurley era have just really, really struggled with getting hurt, just freak stuff that's happened. Cam with the Achilles and Daryl, the injury stuff was kind of known about Daryl. And then when they drafted him, he had to be on a pitch count for most of, if not all of his career with the Rams. And they ended up releasing him last season. Mm-hmm. And so you really need stability. You need consistency, but for this offense to work and for Sean McVay to really, as he's been saying and hinting, very overtly for the last couple of months, to go back to his roots, I think of, hey, you really need a really strong run game. And yes, you have a quarterback who prefers to be a drop back passer, but you now know that you need to move the pocket around. You need to help him out. You don't just put everything on Matthew Stafford's elbow. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, they need to come out of the gate firing here with their run game immediately and establish consistency there. And so that's when running back becomes a really difficult topic because the Rams are never going to pay a running back again.
Right.
We know this. Right. And they're probably never going to draft one, you know, in the, you know, as high as the second round again, unless it's like unless somehow Bijan Robinson drops, which that's not going to happen.
Right.
So, where do you see the right area for a team with the complex situation that they're dealing with as the Rams and also understanding their team building model? Where do you see the best area for them to draft a running back?
I think you probably are looking in the same kind of range that like Kyle Shanahan likes to get, you know, his developmental running backs, which is like fourth, fifth, maybe sixth round guys, right? You want someone who's going to come in, Obviously, it's not going to be cost prohibitive because of where they're drafted. You're not drafting a guy with the expectation that they're going to take on, you know, some Larry Johnson from 2005 level workload, right? And you already, as you explained with Cam Akers, you know, you already have someone in the building at worst that can play the position, that mm-hmm. understands the offense. I would say for them, you know, and especially with running back now, it almost feels like you can kind of blind test taste and come out with like the same type of athlete at this position. They're almost always going to be 5'10", you know, 195 to 205 pounds and run like a 4.4 to 4.5 40, right? Like this is one of the few positions in the NFL where are coming from college football to the NFL, where it's just so clear that you mm-hmm. have to be at least this level of athlete. And then from there, we're kind of scouting traits. So I would say if you're looking in that fourth roundish area, Chase Brown, he's a running back, you know, 5'9", 209 pounds. So he's pretty stout for being a shorter guy, runs a 4.4. So he crosses your athletic threshold and you see that he has pretty good vision. You know, he's able to make guys miss. He gets downhill. You know, he has pretty good burst. He's not going to be a monster in terms of breaking tackles mm-hmm. all the time, but would be very efficient in an outside zone scheme. So that's someone you can look at. If you're looking for tough yardage, Kenny McIntosh from Georgia isn't the fastest guy, but has been a tough yardage type of player basically all throughout his college career and all the Georgia games that I've watched. They trusted him in short yardage situations because he's very dependable. You know, and Cam Akers is a bit of that as well, right? Mm-hmm. Is the fact that you know that you can hand the ball off to him and he's going to hit the hole. If you get an explosive play, it's kind of like found money, but you're really just expecting a certain level of dependability. So that's another guy that kind of falls in that range. And outside of that, that's where it gets, I think, a little bit hairy, right? Like the ideal to me would be a guy like Tyjae Spears. Mm-hmm. I don't know where his range is either. I think Dane has him as a third rounder. I think that he might be, I would say that's probably about accurate, but mm-hmm. it can fly in either direction, especially if some of these other running backs go a little bit earlier than what I think the mocks might have them predicted as, or even like a Zach Charbonnet, right? Like that would be an ideal
yeah, type of Rams running back. Rams fans would love that too.
Yes,
yeah.
Like perfect, you know, tall guy, 215 pounds, 4'5", tough runner, can catch the ball out the backfield, is a good enough blocker, that do-it-all type, you know, that would be perfect for Sean McVay in this offense. Again, I don't know if you'll have access to that guy. So I would say Chase Brown is someone you should look at in the third round, and maybe a Zach Evans or Kenny McIntosh would probably be the other two that could be alternatives if they're in that fourth round, fifth round type of area.
Mm-hmm. That's great stuff, Deontay, because it is such a it's tough, right? You hope and project if you're the Rams that Cam Akers can continue on. And everything I know about Cam and everything I've seen from him this offseason and in OTAs so far tells me that he is in a place where he's ready to carry that forward. But the injury history gives you pause. And the Rams have, they need to like sage their running backs room or something.
Because
my goodness, the spirit of Todd Gurley is just hanging around there, right? Yes. So one other thing too, and I want to get a rapid fire of your guys at the very end of this, but one other thing I wanted to ask you about was developmental quarterback, mm-hmm. right? Because the Rams have one quarterback on right. their roster right now. It is Matthew Stafford. Mm-hmm. You know, after the draft is when they're going to probably look at camp arms and maybe if they don't take a developmental quarterback, you know, in this draft or a backup in this draft, then they're going to look at signing a cheap veteran. John Walford's still out there.
Right.
Bryce Perkins is still out there as well. Two guys who they did not like running their offense to the point where they went out and claimed Baker Mayfield off waivers.
Right.
So it gets a little complicated, right? But I do think that this draft class has so many developmental quarterbacks that with some intriguing potential in it around some of those clusters of pick points that the Rams do have. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I do know for a fact is that they've done a lot of work on this draft class with quarterbacks of that second and third tier. Mm-hmm. So when you are looking at that second tier, that third tier of guys who with high upside, what names stick out to you in terms of fits for this system?
So I would say on the higher end, you would maybe think an Aiden O'Connell, you know, somebody that can sit behind Stafford and learn the offense. I think that the beauty of the Sean McVay Shanahan tree offense is that you can turn it into what Kyle has been doing in San Francisco at basically any time, which is almost just like point and shoot offense, right? Like get to a certain spot in your drop back. You're looking here, throw the ball here. As soon as you're done with the pat, you know, with your run fake. And that's just how you live. And you're throwing screens. You think about, I mean, that's how Sean McVay was able to develop Jared Goff into what he ultimately was in 2018. Is that the offense started off as you're throwing, you know, flat routes on bootlegs and screens to Todd Gurley. And then you eventually get to a point, even though the offense wasn't necessarily, or the team wasn't at a position to compete, you're looking at Jared Goff and it's like, okay, you are a real NFL quarterback from there. So I clearly you can see that the development can be done. So I would say a guy like Aiden O'Connell is somebody who checks kind of all the boxes, may not wow you in any one particular way, but is decent enough to be developed. Tanner McKee is kind of in that same range. I would say he's probably not going to be running very many bootlegs if Sean McVay is talking about getting back to his roots, you know, as a 6'6 guy. I don't know if that's the best use of him, but I think he can do a lot of the play action stuff. He's got a pretty decent arm. His decision making kind of waxes and wanes, but you're obviously not looking for a guy to drop into starting position right out the gate. And then the only other guy I think I would be really comfortable taking a chance on in this class for them, maybe like a Max Duggan. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who's a pretty good athlete. You can probably find him in the seventh round or late sixth. And I know that they have like three, I believe, six round picks. So maybe you get him at the end of their cluster of six rounders. That's somebody that's a good athlete. You can run all the bootleg stuff. He's a smart guy, you know, played a ton of college football. So he's going to come in the door pretty well prepared to take on what you're going to ask of him. Not the strongest arm, but he'll do what he's coached to do. And I think that we're at a place now where you can look at quarterbacks that come from that air raid tree at the college level and feel like they're actually well coached enough to be able to adjust pretty quickly to the NFL game. And I think that Duggan can do that.
So I love that you said that, because I've been thinking about this because I have no life and this is what I think about. The fact that they went after Baker Mayfield on waivers tells me that Max Duggan is kind of a guy that they would like. And I'm not saying the pedigree is the same at all. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that gamer quality, that scrappy sort of like, I am going to bang my head against my teammates' helmets sort of quality, like that really intense sort of, I'm going to, if I have to like kick and claw and try to get the ball downfield, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And then also some of those inconsistencies, but also when things are functioning, it's a lot of bootlegs. It's a lot of play action. It's a lot of those setup plays that come in clusters that Sean McVay was his bread and butter early in his career. And so I think that that's what sort of continues to, the hair on the back of my neck raises a little bit thinking about, okay, if he's there in the sixth, that may be someone that they would go after, not because necessarily he tested well, not because he's consistent, but because those qualities are something that really attracted them to Baker Mayfield, and them being open to that tells me maybe they're open to this type of player.
Right. I think that, like you said, he fits the kind of personality type that would draw you to Baker Mayfield, right? If you're drawn to Baker Mayfield in terms of what he would be in the locker room and the way his play style, and like you said, his approach to the game and the intensity, you can look at any press conference of Max Duggan's, you can watch any TCU game, especially the ones where they were trailing, and you see a guy that is truly never say die. To the very end, he is going to take whatever hit he needs to take to deliver a throw. He's going to do whatever he needs to do at 100 miles an hour. And I think that for a late round quarterback, that's probably the kinds of qualities that you're looking for, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a guy that's not going to get a ton of reps in season, you know, or really outside of the beginning of training camp, right? Because you've got to get your reps with your starters, but you want somebody that is going to be chomping at the bit for his first opportunity to get out there and prove that he can do something. And I think that Duggan definitely fits that archetype.
Yeah. And one thing for Rams fans not to roll out is bringing back a guy like John Walford, someone who knows the offense, because you're going to have someone running scout, and they run a live scout team. So I don't think Duggan could immediately do something like that, but he could be a developmental project for them and then eventually get to doing that. But I can see them re-signing somebody who knows their system really well and can throw that live scout and can do that in a way that's competitive, because that's very much something that defense depends on. And they'll need that in order to grow. That's a huge element to this backup quarterback situation that they are certainly thinking about, is who can, our defense is going to be extremely raw next year. Who can come in and give us incredible scout looks to where we can actually like get these guys developing. But Deontay, before I let you go, and thank you so much for your time on this today.
No problem.
Rapid fire. I need to know, who are your guys in this draft class?
Ooh, that's tough. So I'll try to go. I don't think I have a guy for quarterback. So I'll just go position by position. If I had to pick one, to CJ Stroud, but that feels like cheating because obviously he's going to be a top 10 pick. Running back, I would say Tyjae Spears. I mentioned I'm a really big fan of his. Wide receiver, I'm a USC fan, so Jordan Addison. I will probably still go with him. Tight end, we went over all my guys. I like those guys that are outside of who are projected to go maybe top 50, top 40. I think you can find a lot of value there. Offensive line, Paris Johnson Jr. I'm always going to be a fan of the humongous tackle. So him and Darnell Wright are two of the people that I really like. And then on defense, like I'm a defensive guy. So Will Anderson, I've been pounding the table saying that he's almost underrated. He gets, I think, a little underappreciated because we've been overexposed to him over his career. Brian Branch has been a guy for me that I've loved. And I'll say Deontay Banks. And it's not just because phonetically his name comes off the same as mine. He's a really interesting corner. He's got a lot of speed, pretty physical. He's raw, but I think he's got a good chance of being successful at the next level. So I would say that those are my guys.
Amazing. Deontay, thank you so much for taking the time. I know this is like your craziest time of year, so I feel very blessed that you were able to join us here. I know Rams fans are just giddy about this right now. What are you working on? Where can people find your work? And, you know, we know you guys, theathletic.com, but let us know where we can find you.
So yeah, on social media, you can find me on Twitter at Deontay Lee FB, all one word. As far as work that I'm working on, I'm examining why it is that we care so much about the draft. This is a big project of mine. I've been on it basically since right after the combine, and I am looking forward to finally having the whole thing together and you guys seeing it, because obviously I'm a fan first. And this was something that drew me into covering the game. And you can get all your mock drafts here. It's not just me, but Dane Brugler, Nate Tice, Nick Baumgartner, the whole draft team. I don't mind plugging them as well. So if there's anything happening with football, with the draft, or on defense, I'm sure that I have a tweet or post about it someplace.
Amazing. Yeah. You guys keep an eye out for that piece. Deontay was talking to me a little bit about it before we started recording, and it sounds like it's going to be incredible. I read everything you write. So, I know a lot of Rams fans do as well. And just so grateful to have you on today. I will see you next week. I know I'll hear you next week and read you next week. Maybe not see you in person, but I'll definitely see your work next week. And once again, guys, go follow him at Deontay Lee FB on Twitter, and then any of his work, all of his work at theathletic.com is fantastic stuff. Deontay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jordan. Have a good one.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.